Hello and welcome to Raising a Pro. I'm Annie Apple, journalist and NFL mom to my son, Eli Apple. Today's episode of Raising a Pro is definitely a throwback episode. I started doing this podcast at the start of the pandemic in 2020. At that time, we didn't know where this new normal would take us or how long we'll be here. But 500 years later, you know, we found a way to make do, and here we are. So I started recording this podcast, and my very first guest was Cheryl Boza. Our sons, Eli Apple and Joey Boza, went to Ohio State together. They were recruited in as freshmen together. They won the national title together, that college football playoff, undisputed national champions. Yep, that's us. And they were drafted together, all together in Chicago, in the same room, same space and time, to the NFL. So when we recorded this a year ago, lockdown had just begun, and Cheryl was home in Florida with her two sons, LA Chargers defensive end Joey Boza and San Francisco 49ers defensive end Nick Boza, the younger brother. Well, the boys were home and eating up all Cheryl's food. But as a mom, you'd have it no other way. In week two of the 2020 NFL season, Nick suffered a season-ending injury when he tore his ACL. So a year later, we're bringing back this episode where we learned so much about Joey and Nick Boza through the eyes and football legacy of their mom, Cheryl. One day when they get into the Hall of Fame, I think your uterus should be right there in the NFL Hall of Fame right in Canton, because this is just amazing. This is just absolutely awesome. But let's go back to the beginning, though. Before we start to talk about the boys, let's talk about your family. I know football runs deep in your family. Your brother played, and I believe your grandfather played, and then you married a baller. So tell me, how was that experience growing up football?
Yeah, well, my biological father played, but he unfortunately wasn't in the picture. So, you know, I never knew that aspect of it. But both of my brothers played, and me and my younger brother went to Ohio State together. And he was a superstar at Ohio State. So, I mean, that's where my whole Ohio State legacy sort of started, was from going to school there and, you know, being at the games every weekend, you know, to watch him play. You know, that's how that started. And then, of course, he was a first round draft pick to the Miami Dolphins.
And let's tell everybody his name, by the way. Let's shout him out.
Oh, that's Eric Kumerow, my brother, my younger brother. He's 1 year younger than me. And I was actually at the University of Illinois my freshman year of college, and he was being recruited basically by every school in the country at the time. And he and I were super close. Well, we still are, but at the time we were super close. And, you know, he was a real homeboy. So he was going to, and we're from Chicago. So he was going to go to Illinois. And I told him at the time, you know, don't come to Illinois on my account. You know, if you want to go someplace else, I'll just go with you. And he said, I'd really like to go to Ohio State. I said, yeah, good. Me too. So I transferred. So that was that. Eric was drafted to the Miami Dolphins in 1988. He was drafted in the first round. He was actually the 16th pick in 1988 to the Miami Dolphins. I was coming down to visit him, and he became very good friends with actually two fellows on the team that he was like inseparable with, one of which was the first round draft pick from 1987, who was also the 16th pick in the draft 1 year prior to him. His name was John Boza. So Eric and John were both the 16th pick to the Miami Dolphins simultaneous years after. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. So, yeah, I came down, visited Eric, was at a couple games, and, you know, John and I met, and that was it. The rest is history.
So now tell us, when you had these two little boys, the both of you, and tell us when it first started playing football. I know Joey first started. So tell us, why was it important for you to choose the football team at the early age that you chose for them? And how old was Joey at this point?
Well, Joey played a year early. I think he was, you know, about 7 years old or whatever. And he played in the town that we lived near. And their program was so-so. It wasn't a great program. So after that, we had pulled Joey
even
out
at age seven.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you could, you know, Annie, you've been there, you can tell.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just wasn't necessary. John and I both really weren't keen on the idea of the boys playing at that young of an age anyway. So, you know, we were trying to keep them out anyway. And it was actually Nick who, I think like the following year, literally just, you know, had a temper tantrum on the floor and told me and John that, you know, if we didn't let him play football, he was going to die. And at that time, you know, John and I are standing staring at him going, what is this? You know, like what 7-year-old like even knows that, you know, that's crazy. So, yeah, I got in my car and probably visited, you know, 20 different parks and different, you know, towns and their programs and sort of, you know, spoke with people and, you know, watched their programs and whatnot until I found one that I just thought was phenomenal. And I still think they're phenomenal. And literally those people are some of the closest people in our life to this day, you know, since my kids are, you know, 7 and 9 years old. So.
Wow. Yeah. So, you know, one of my favorite Nick Bosa story is when you told me about, you know, because the kids he played with predominantly all African-Americans.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about the Afro.
Well, the Afro. I mean, it's so funny you mentioned it because I was just talking to him about it yesterday, I think. I can't even remember in what context, because when he was little, he was like, had that like super blonde pin straight hair. And he just wanted an Afro. That's all I'd want. And, you know, I want an Afro, Mom. And he got his Afro. Now he's got his Afro.
I always find that so fascinating because when kids are little, they just, all, you know, they're just used to who they're used to. And I guess all the kids on his team had this beautiful Afro. So he wanted one. And you were like, he prayed for years. And one day, there it is. Because when you see Joey's hair is straight.
It's wavier. It's wavier. Yeah. Not like Nikki's. No, it's not like super.
No, God bless Nikki. He got his prayers answered.
He did.
Do some lottery prayers for me.
Oh, you know.
Honestly, though, you came from a football family. So why at first did you try to keep the boys away from football until Nick had to say, listen, I need to play or I'm going to die at age 7?
Yeah, I don't know. We just thought, you know, they were a little young for it. Obviously, we wanted to protect their little bodies. And, you know, we were opening the door for any, you know, any sport they were interested in, anything they were interested in. You know, Joey took piano lessons when he was little, and he was very good at piano. And, you know, I just wanted, you know, when they're little, that's what you do. You sort of, you know, it's like throwing the pasta at the wall and see what sticks, you know, and, you know, you just want to protect them, you know, they did the soccer and Nick didn't play baseball so much. He only played 1 year of baseball. Joey was actually a very good baseball player. They both played basketball, you know, just into high school, but, it just, you know, especially with Nick, football was innately Nick.
And, you know, from what I understand, Nick also chose his position too, right? He wanted to be on the defensive side of the ball.
That's one of my favorite stories, honestly.
Yes, tell us about that.
Yeah, Nick's very first day of practice. He's 7 years old. Like we were talking, probably one of the only white kids out on the field. And he walks up to this gigantic coach, just this huge, huge guy, Coach TJ. And he comes out and of course they send him over to the offense and he walks up and I'm watching this from way, you know, in the distance. And I see him tug on TJ's shirt and TJ looks down at him, shrugs his shoulders and points. And so after practice, I said, what did you say to that coach, honey? And he said, oh, I just told him I don't want to play offense. I want to play defense. And I mean, what kid at 7 doesn't want to hold the ball? You know, it's like crazy. So
a kid who God answers his hair prayer. Okay. That's the kid.
Yeah. So anyway, that was it.
So he always knew.
That was it. He wanted to play defense.
So now let's fast forward to high school. Let's get to Joey first because mm-hmm. Nick came a couple of years later.
Right.
In high school, how heavily, I mean, they went to a football high school, you know, Thomas Aquinas right there in Florida. So how many offers did Joey end up with? Was Ohio State always the one or, you know, did they have to recruit him and for him to really say, okay, I'll choose you?
No, Joey was the anti-Buckeye. So Joey told me early on, like from freshman year, you know, he warned me, oh, Mom, I'm not going to Ohio State. So don't push it. And I knew with Joey, the best way to handle it was just to, just to acquiesce and be like, okay, you know, that's whatever, babe. I'm here to support you and whatnot. I mean, it killed me, you know, sophomore year in high school or whatnot. You know, he'd make a huge play out on the field and he'd do like a Roll Tide or something. And I would be in the stands going, oh my God, God forbid, you know, dying.
A Roll Tide?
Don't make me go to Alabama. You know what I mean? But, and, you know, yeah, he was totally going to Bama. That was his first offer. He was a 15-year-old freshman when Nick Saban offered him Alabama. It's Nick. Yeah, I'm on the podcast. This is Annie.
Tell Nick to back off. Hi, Nick.
Hey.
How are you?
Oh, he just walked through. He just finished his virtual meetings. So weird, you know.
It is weird. It's a whole different world. So how did Joey go from Roll Tide to Go Bucks?
He was doing he was Roll Tiding out on the field, and I was just shaking my head and
keeping my
mouth shut. And then Urban was offered the job at Ohio State, and Joey came home from school one day and said, I think I want to visit Ohio State, Mom. And I like totally kept a poker face and just, you know, inside I was freaking out, but outside I was like, okay, sure. Yeah, we could do that. No problem. And you better believe I like booked the trip immediately.
You booked it that night. You're like, we're not going to sleep. We're going to Columbus right now.
We're leaving right now.
Pack your bags.
It was funny because we as a family, we were doing the sort of Big Ten visit of schools. We went, so we flew up to Chicago from Florida and we drove to Wisconsin first. And then we went to Ohio State and then we went to Michigan. And after we went to Ohio State, the following week was Ohio State's spring game. And we get back to Florida and Joey looks at me and said, Mom, do you think we could go back to Columbus next weekend for the spring game? And I went to Ohio State. So I know there's 100,000 people at their spring games. And getting a flight, getting a hotel room is going to cost me a fortune. Well, let me tell you, I didn't care. I was like, I am getting that kid back to Columbus.
You got two kidneys, Cheryl. You got two kidneys. You only need one.
Exactly. So,
What you didn't know is I talked to Coach Larry Johnson yesterday because I wanted to kind of talk to him and get his take on the guys before I talk to you. And, you know, he came, of course, in Joey's sophomore year. But one of the things we always talk about is just how chill Joey is, right?
Yeah.
And I remember the Penn State game where, you know, we had this thing at Ohio State when, you know, if a mom couldn't make it, we all stepped in like we're like your mom of the day. And I remember that game so insane. And it was late at night and, we, you know, the plane was delayed, taking the boys back. So I went down, I saw Joey. I said, Joey, your mom couldn't be here, but I'm your mom for tonight. He's like, okay. Like, just really, really very chill. Like, absolutely, like, no fuss, no muss, just chill. So I'm always, how did he do as a roommate with Ezekiel Elliott? Because that personality was just so different.
Oh my God, they were so close. They were so close, those two. They were inseparable. They really were. They must have balanced each other, you know. I mean, that game makes me laugh, especially, you know, when you're talking about Joey's personality, because, you know, Joey made the last play to end that game.
He pushed the, because Joey was like, I'm ready to go the heck home.
So he sacked what's his name, the quarterback, with using the running back to sack him.
Yes.
He was a running back, right? Whoever, but he used a player to sack Hackenberg.
Another player.
And after the game, I get on the phone with him and I'm like, oh my God, you were amazing. You were so good. And, you know, how'd you do? And he just went, I just was tired. I wanted the game to be over.
Exactly. And
I just like, wanted to laugh my head off. I'm like, okay.
That was his same attitude. He's like, I just wanted to go home.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Now let's talk about, you know, going through college and winning a national title, which is amazing. We won the first undisputed college football playoff title. So now Nick is watching what's going on with Joey. So how did, you know, Nick also choose Ohio State? Was that just a given, or did, you know, did he have to be persuaded?
No, no. Nick was my Buckeye. Nick was a Buckeye from the time he was, you know, when he was a baby. He was my, you know, my weekend warrior. You know, every Saturday he and I would watch Buckeye games together and, you know, cheer on my Buckeyes. You know, when he was in middle school and he had braces, his bands were gray and red, scarlet and gray, you know. So he's my little Buckeye. He always wanted to go to Ohio State. And then obviously, you know, with Larry Johnson being there, that just, that sealed the deal right there. You can't get a better D-line coach than Larry Johnson. So
there hasn't been one made. And going back to, you know, even going back to the draft before we get to Nick, I think what made our draft so special was being able to, all of us being able to share that experience together.
Oh,
and before we delve into Nick, let's go to Joey, because there were so many predictions during that draft that Joey was going to end up with Cleveland. I remember when we were all being like that lounge area where all the, you know, all the guys were, it was every day. They're like, Joey, you're going to Cleveland, you know? So how surprised were you when, you know, the Chargers chose him?
You know, it's really funny. It's really a funny story. And Annie, I know you know my best friends because they were at all the games with us, Dawn and Anne-Marie. And obviously.
Yeah, shout out Dawn and Anne-Marie.
Yeah, and they were at the draft with me. And it was really funny. We knew that the two quarterbacks were going to go 1 and 2. That was a given in the draft. We were all thinking that Joey might go to Dallas 4. Where, you know, obviously where Zeke got picked. And, you know, so, you know, you do all that speculation and you're going back and forth. The morning of the draft, I woke up and I looked at Dawn and Anne-Marie and I said, Joey's going to San Diego. And they both looked at me and told me I was crazy and that the Chargers didn't even show any interest in him and he didn't even visit there and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I said, no, no, I truly believe that Joey is the number one pick in this draft. And the only reason he's not going number one is because of the two quarterbacks. And so because of that, I think he's going to San Diego. And that's what happened. And we freaked out.
So I'm going to need you to go and buy me 3 lottery tickets today. All right. when we're done. Seriously. When you just woke up that morning, like, what did you eat the night before? Like, what did you dream?
It literally was logic, though. It really was. It was logic. It's kind of like, you know, it's kind of like the year Nick was in the draft. It was like this year with Chase being in the draft. You know, you just, you know who's the top D lineman in, you know, college football. They're gonna be the first pick. And the only reason they're not going to be the first pick is if somebody needs a quarterback. It just, it's how it goes. You know what I mean? It just is.
And that was the most emotional I had ever seen Joey. Joey was literally crying real tears in that draft.
Yeah. Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I think the only time he cried more was at Nick's draft.
Oh, really?
Oh, he was bawling. He was bawling at Nick's draft.
So you pretty much knew Nick was going to go to San Francisco. Did you have the same dream or was it just, you just knew it?
I didn't know. I thought he might, A, might go to Arizona and be the first pick, or B, Arizona would trade the first pick. So I wasn't as like convinced as I was like with Joey. With Joey, I swear, I just woke up and I knew what was going to happen. And with Nick, I thought factors would happen, different, you know, things might happen. So, and it was really crazy too, because in the green room, the call that came into him was like literally with 30 seconds left on the clock. So it was the whole time.
The whole time. Wow.
That you're sitting there going, and you're looking at him and his family and like, did he get the call yet? And we're all looking at each other going, you know, freaking out, like, what's going on, you know? And then finally, you know, with seconds left on the clock, you see him pick up the phone and you're like, okay, well, it's not that. So anyway.
Well, let's go back to September 15th, that TCU game. Because I know I was there, Dawn was there. We're all there to watch Ohio State play, you know, TCU. And the game that Nick went down. Tell us about, you know, tell me about that experience. Because we know as football moms, when your kid goes down, it's like your heart has left your body and is on the field.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, I've always said to my kids, you know, if you go down, I'm going to kill you. You know, you better not do that to me. I'll kill you. You know, and it's funny because, you know, and I know I'm bouncing around a little bit, but like, I remember Joey, I was in New York, but he wasn't playing New York, wherever he was playing. And I was away watching and he went down on the field. He got a stinger. So it appeared to be a neck injury. And they took him to the locker room. Well, literally, my phone was ringing within 2 minutes and it was him. Because you know, our kids know, you know.
Yes. They
know.
The first thing you better do is call my mom.
You better call me and say, you know, you're okay, you're not okay, like whatever. You know, so yeah, I mean, I know you can certainly relate to how we felt. It was devastating. And we could tell that it was a, you know, a real injury. So, yeah.
Well, you know what? Before you tell us more, I talked to Coach Johnson about that and to get his take on that moment when Nick went down.
That was heart-wrenching. That was heartbreaking because he was on a pace to really have a great junior year. I mean, just between him and Chase and all the end, they were to have really, and I don't think any college football would see anything like what those guys could have done together. And he was on a fast pace. He really was. He had a great work summer, a great workout. I mean, everything is in line up. They go have a great season. And I tell people, Nick is so powerful from the ground up, from his lower body down to his ankle. He is so powerful from the ground. And he pressed so much power to the ground when he takes off. And he comes around the edge, and he's almost close to his sack. The guy pulls him down, and he gets up, and he turns over. And we all kind of run to the field, and he just is growing. And yeah, he looked in his eyes. You could see him shaking his head. And it's just, something's wrong, Coach. And that was heartbreaking, you know what I mean? Really, then to find out later what was going on. And it was a tough. And there was a lot of tears shared, you know? It really was, because he was so, so special. And he did everything right to get to where he's at, too. That's the neat thing about it. He needed to go to get his rehab done to really spend time, you know? And people just said, why he ran away from the team. But no, I really understood why he was doing it, you know what I mean? He had a chance to go to a great place to get rehab, and not that our place is not great, but he just wanted a different surgery. It was really tough surgery for him. Really, once they got him, it was probably more damage than anybody ever thought. But it was a tough decision for him, you know, for them, the family, to say, hey, we're going to take you out of school and go rehab, and rather than say he might be back in his summer. He would have never made it back based on his injury at that time, trying to play one game. So it was a tough decision for him. And he came in the office that day, and he knocked it into his coach, can we talk? Yeah, I walked in, we sit down, we both cried like little kids. And then the last thing he remembered saying to me was that, sorry, Coach, I let you down. I was like, what, let me down? What are you talking about? His feeling was because he thought he let me down because he couldn't finish his season. You know, what an unselfish player. You know what I mean? And from that moment on, my relationship with Nick just like went 1,000 miles per hour, because I knew how much he cared and cared for his teammates. And to this day, you know what I mean, we talk about that, you know, the love for each other and the fact where he's at today. I just can't be much proud of where he's at today.
I'm telling you, when Coach Johnson talks about your boys, you can almost hear, like if love had a sound, you can hear it in his voice.
Yeah, I love that, man.
And that was tough because I remember at that time people were, you know, projecting. I know Urban was trying to say, oh, maybe he will come back November. And at what point did you guys as a family make the decision that, you know what, after surgery, we're going to focus on Nick just rehabbing? I know that must have been tough for Nick not to come back, you know what I mean, and wanting to play in a postseason and all those games. So what made you as a family decide, you know what, this is what's best and we're going to move forward?
It was, I don't know if I could come up with words that can describe how difficult it was. It was ever changing. It wasn't like we woke up one day and we're like, ah, you know, this is what we need to do. It was so hard. It was so hard. You know, there were so many emotions involved. Obviously, you know, my heart's breaking for my son. Selfishly, my heart's breaking for myself. You know, it was crazy. It was really horrible. And then we knew, you know, as a family, we knew probably a week before, you know, John and Nick had a chance to sit down with the coaches. And so that, you know, that was a horrible week too. But obviously they wanted to do it in person. They wanted to do it when John was there, you know, things like that. So, you know, just that week of knowing was, you felt like you were lying to people. It was just, it was really horrible. It was really, it was devastating. It was devastating. And that could have been the year, man. That could have been, first of all, that should have been Nick's year. That should have been, you know, Nick's year to, you know, Joey was up for every, you know, defensive line award, you know, in his career. He was up for the Bednarik, and he was up for the Lombardi, and, you know, won a national championship and all these great things. And obviously, John, that's what John and I wanted for Nick. We wanted him to have his opportunity to go and do that. And like Coach Jay said, oh my gosh, could you imagine Chase and Nick on either side? Holy mackerel.
Oh my God.
It really would have been legendary. It would have been something, you know, epic that would have gone down in history. There's no question in my mind. Yeah, it would have been nuts.
But you know why? You know, it happened the way sometimes you feel it was supposed to happen, right?
Yeah.
Because he was able to focus on just getting better, getting stronger, getting his health back. So now, you know, you have them both in the pros. What's the hardest part transitioning into pros for both of them, you think?
It's so much bigger now than it was back then. You know, I mean, just even the draft, you know, and then that was what was interesting about sort of watching the draft this year with the kids at home. You know, that's how my brother was drafted. You know, he was a first round pick, and we were sitting in my mom's family room, in my parents' family room, you know, and that's how you did the draft back then. And now, you know, they'll have, you know, well, look at, they've got, you know, NFL Network 365, you know, and it's like, how do you talk about football 365 days a year? You know, it's bizarre, you know, and they'll make stories about anything, you know, the combine,
exactly.
The this, the that, and it's just like, oh, you know, it's a lot.
Speaking of making stories, I know, because I've been there. How do you handle, though, when things about your kid is reported about your kid that is not true?
You know, obviously as moms, it, you know, probably bothers us more than it bothers, you know, our kid or, you know, whoever else, you know. Well, first of all, they grew up in this era. So this is more their, you know, social media and stuff is more, you know, something that they're, you know, a part of. But, oh, it makes me crazy. It makes you crazy, and you just have to turn it off, and you have to not look at it, and, you know, you just have to consider the source.
Exactly.
And, you know, and that's basically it, you know, because the people that know, know.
But, you know, I had that conversation with Coach. I talked to Larry Johnson about that whole controversy with social media and Nick, and this is what he had to say, and I appreciated his feedback.
I think the biggest thing, and everything that came out, you're a young player. You make a decision, you make a bad decision. We all make the bad decisions. And he realized that. The thing I liked about it, he owned up to it. I just made a bad decision. I shouldn't have done that. I shouldn't have tweeted those about my thoughts, about my personal thoughts. But as far as being a teammate, a guy, a great guy in the locker room, there's no question about it. There's no question. He is a great team. And I share that with the 49ers. I share it with so many reporters about that, the fact that how great a kid he was. I was very open about that. Nick is a great kid, and he can cross all barriers, you know. You know, black, white, you name it. It doesn't matter to him. And just kind of way, you know, he's a youth football days. He played on an all black team. Yeah. So, I mean, here's a guy that, you know, like we say things that we shouldn't say, and he regretted it. But the locker room guy, hey, unbelievable. They love him at the 49ers. Absolutely love him. And that's what I tell the coaches and the staff is that wait till he gets in the locker room. You're going to love him because he's got great passion for the game. And that's all he cares about. He wants to be great. And that's going to permeate on the football field. That, it went away so fast because he went in there and did exactly what I thought he was going to do. Kept his mouth shut, you know, became a great teammate and worked really hard, and he had great results in his first year.
And I think, you know, one of the things I talked to Larry about when he talked about just the relationship between Joey and Nick and him is that trust level was there. And I think what, you know, what's always hard, I know because I've been there, when people report something, whether it's about you, whether it's your kid, that it's not true, you feel like you want to respond. But one thing I've learned is like, you got to spend your life living the truth instead of defending a lie. And so that had to be, I remember that having to be as a mom so difficult for you because it's like, no, that's not my kid. But how do you think, you know, it helped your kids? Because this is all part of growing up, you know, and learning just like how to know who you are and stick with who you are and not trying to get everybody to believe something about you. You know what I mean? Like just, and that's one thing Coach Johnson talked about, how, you know, the boys have a tight circle and they're very chilled and low key. But I know as a parent, it must have definitely bothered you because that was not who Nick is.
Exactly. And, you know, I you know, I love what Coach Johnson said too, because, you know, Nick does take responsibility, you know, even if he said something that he, you know, he didn't mean in malice, but it hurt somebody, he feels bad about that. You know, he's always, you know, he's an empathetic, nice person, you know. But yeah, when people say things about your kids, I think the hardest thing, and you and I talked about this when I was on the show in New York with you, you know, one of the worst things that was done to my kid is, you know, it's kind of like the year that Joey was holding out. That was really devastating because, that's like your, you know, that, you know, your people that you're supposed to trust.
Who do you think you are? Who do you think? And I love that. And it's so funny that skipped my mind. And I think what I loved most about Joey during that time is like, and this is a tribute to your family in a sense of you keep a small, tight circle. And in that circle are the people who matter the most. And realizing that everybody else outside of that circle, their opinions, their take, all that stuff, it doesn't matter. And I think that's what was so powerful about that holdout. And it wasn't even a holdout. It's about, okay, I'm waiting for you to get the contract right.
Right, exactly. It wasn't a holdout. They had the collective bargaining agreement. There's no, you know, there's no argument. It already says how much money they're going to make. You know, it's written. So, yeah, it wasn't a holdout. It was them messing around with stuff.
That must have been hard for you.
Oh, it was so hard because, you know, Joey was 20 years old at the time, for God's sake. You know, he was a baby and they were playing it out in the media and really ripping this kid to shreds. And it just wasn't at all who he was, you know, just so to have, you know, grown-ups doing that to your baby. Oh, my God. I was like,
Mama Bear unleashed.
Oh yeah,
Mama Bear on somebody's ass.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
I still can get mad about that one if I think about it too hard. Yeah,
but he came back, won Defensive Rookie of the Year, and shut the ball up.
Indeed.
Right?
Yeah, poetic justice, absolutely.
But you know, it's so tough that you bring that up. That people forget that our sons are just that. They're like 20 years old. I know Eli came into Ohio State at 17. He came into the league at 20. You're still evolving.
Yeah.
And these grown adults will sit up there and make up stories and just it's the most interesting thing and annoying thing in the world.
Yeah, it really is. It really is.
And it takes everything Jesus, John the Baptist, and Mary to help you keep your cool. I know, I've been there.
Oh, my goodness.
So, okay, now we're winding down here. Let's get to the good stuff. Okay, now, you know, I think Joey's been asked this question before about, okay, you're dating, like, you have to keep the family line going. So when it comes to dating, what do you look for and what do they look for?
Well, the funny thing is that I apologize to any girl out there who has dated my sons, you know, in the last couple of years, but they're focused on football. And, you know, I know my kids, I only meet very few women. So they're pretty tunnel visioned right now, but we laugh all the time about, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, obviously when they have kids and,
genetics, you know, they have to be tall.
Yeah. The genetic, the breeding. Oh, that's it. That's where I was going. The breeding material, you know? So we joke. I'm like, sorry. She's not good breeding material. It's a joke, obviously. So
what advice, honestly, have you given the boys about women? Because we all know with good looks, and you have really good looking kids. It's not like there's anything wrong with ugly ones. I'm sure God loved the ugly kids. And there are no ugly kids, it's just ugly parents.
It's just, you know, what I've said growing up and what I've, you know, told them, you know, to be careful of this, be careful of that, you know, cover that thing up. And, you know, I don't need to be a grandma anytime soon. And, you know, we don't need baby mamas, only when you're ready for that. And, you know, that kind of thing. So, you know, both of my boys, they're just like, you know, we've been talking, they're just very close to home. I'm sure they go out and have their fun, but, you know, they're just pretty low key guys. They really are.
Seriously, that's the focus, is football.
It is, completely. 100%. I mean, literally, that's what my kids do. And then obviously during this lockdown, it's been the three of us and their trainer. That's it.
My God, do you have food left?
No, how could I? I mean, I still had to go shopping, you know, 3-4 times a week, you know, when you're not supposed to be going, you know.
Coach Johnson told me about how Joey used to come over to his house, just eat up everything, like peanut butter and jelly, steak, and just make himself at home. So I'm thinking during quarantine, wow, who's cooking though? Because yeah. I hear, Joey can cook.
Joey was super close with, well, both boys were, but Joey especially with Coach Jay's wife, Chris.
Yes.
And she just would, you know, cook for him and oh my gosh, yeah.
So how are things now adjusting during the pandemic though?
Well, everything's getting, you know, thank God, starting to get back to normal. It's, you know, I mean, they just tried to stay on their regimen as much as possible. You know, the parks would close down and then they'd have to find someplace else to run. And, you know, this a training facility would shut down. So they'd find a friend with a private gym so they could, you know, train there or whatever. And then they'd, you know, come to my house and I'd cook and they'd go to sleep. I mean, that's what we did for the last 8 weeks. So, you know, that's basically it.
So, you know, so if you had one advice you would give to any parent whose kid's just starting this journey, what would be the one advice you give them?
You just need to, it's all about support. It really is. It's all about support. You got to let them, you know, do their thing and experience it the way that they want to experience it and go along for the ride because boy, is it fun. What a ride. What a wild ride. It's so exciting. It's so special to be in this world. It's so short-lived as we know, you know, it's just not something that is going to be around forever. And you need to stay level-headed about it because, and that's something like Joey is almost, sometimes I have to tell him, I'm like, it's okay to get accolades. You work hard. You happen to be the best, one of the best ever at something. How many people can say that, you know, that, oh, I'm the best, whatever, or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, the fact that he will go down as one of the best who ever played the game. And he just is so, like, Joey's so adamant about, you know, I am not, like, why do people want my autograph? Why do people want to say hi to me? You know, he doesn't understand why people think he's better or whatever. You know, it's really funny. And I'm like, it's okay. It's okay to be famous, honey. It's all right.
And, you know, and that's the thing that, you know, when I think about Joey, when I think about Nick, and even the same with Eli, where the love of football was always the factor, the goal, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't about the money, yeah. Or it definitely wasn't about the fame. All those are just residual, but they yeah. love the game. So it's like when you're doing what yeah. you love, and there are different reasons why people play this game. But I know from Eli, I remember when he was younger, he just loved football. You know, and that's why yeah. for a parent, when you come through, you know, when you have to deal with all the trappings and the stuff of fame, it's a lot of challenge because we know our sons didn't come into this for all of that. They just love to play this
right.
game. So I think the hardest part sometimes is navigating all those things outside of football.
Right. And I think there's a lot of people, parents out there that think, you know, they want to know the magic pill. What is it? What did you do? You know, what did they do? And, you know, you don't just get this because you want to be that, you know, it's the dedication, what they put into this to get to where they are is nobody would ever, you know, that people just can't get it. You don't wake up with this. You know what I mean?
It's hard work.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
It's definitely hard work. Joey mm-hmm. and Nick, who's your favorite? Just between us, we'll never tell them. Which one's your favorite?
Depends on the day.
Ah, and that is such a mommy answer.
Yeah. And people that kind of know them think they're exactly alike. So I think that's really funny. But yeah, people that know them know that Nick is happy-go-lucky, you know, and real easygoing guy. And Joey is super cerebral and really deep and a deep thinker and challenging, you know, and challenges things and people and thoughts. And, you know, so it depends on what mood you're in.
So in a Hollywood movie, who should play Joey and who should play Nick?
Oh, God. Wow.
We'll get to who will play you in a minute, but who?
Oh, my gosh. Who? Like somebody really, really pensive would have to play Joey. I don't know. You know, I don't know why I'm thinking of John Malkovich. He's so old, but, you know, he just seems so like, deep and like, you know.
John Malkovich like, can play his great-grandfather. How about
right. That? Yeah. I don't know why. You know, and then Nick, it would just be some, you know, young, fun, cute guy.
Like?
I don't know. God, I'm going to think about this like 20 minutes from now and be like, oh, wait, I'm going to text her. Yeah. I don't know. I can't
okay. The first movie Joey and the first movie Nick ever cried at?
Cried. Well, I know I terrified Joey with a scary movie when he was young. Gosh, darn it. Annie, you're getting me with these questions. You know, I'm 56 years old. My brain doesn't work like that. You know.
Well, why? It's so funny because my brother, Michael, I remember when the kids were little, I had him babysit them once and he took them to see Blade. That scary movie. And poor Eli could not sleep for a week.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm like, Mike, you cannot babysit these kids again, ever.
Ever. Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. I don't know. I can remember, you know, the things that Joey was obsessed with. He was obsessed with the movie Pinocchio, and he was obsessed with Winnie the Pooh. So, yeah. So at one of his birthday parties when he was little, I got Winnie the Pooh and Tigger to come to the party. Winnie wow. the Pooh showed up at my house. He was like 6'6", 140 pounds. And I'm like, really? Really? You're Winnie the Pooh? I was terrible. It was like the worst Winnie the Pooh dress up guy ever.
Oh my God. We should find that guy. We should find him.
You know, like just
6'6" Winnie the Pooh.
Like super tall, skinny Winnie the Pooh. I'm like, what?
Somebody called Al sick that day. That's all I can think.
Terrible.
And honestly, I don't think we ever found that 6'6" Winnie the Pooh. So he's out there. Whoever you are, we will find you. Seriously, as I reflect on my conversation with Cheryl Boza, I loved hearing about the process of allowing the boys to find their own way and discover their own love of the game. I was also struck by what she said about Joey sometimes not always fully understanding why people want his autograph and why they want to take pictures with him. Honestly, our son signed up for football. They didn't sign up for fame. Football is what they love to do, and football just happened to be televised, but not everybody who plays the game wants the fame. Which brings me to today's Annie's Clapback. Fame is what's projected on our sons. It's not what they signed up for. When they signed up as little boys to play this game, it was for the love of the game. Fame is what's projected onto them. And it gets challenging because they're young and still evolving. I mean, most guys come into the league at 20 years old, but their every moment is scrutinized daily by sports media who sees them as a story, a headline, or by fans who see them as objects with numbers on their backs and helmets. Somehow the popular belief is that the more money you make, the less humanity you deserve. But we all deserve to have our humanity respected and regarded. And if this pandemic has taught us anything else, it's taught us just that. You know, I've been doing this podcast now for a year, and I would like to say thank you all for listening. Raising a Pro is part of the Audio Boom Originals Network. Make sure you follow the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts so you don't miss any new episodes or even the throwback ones. And I'd love if you could support the show by rating and reviewing. And once again, as always, thank you and see you next time, family.